and welcome to episode 153 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the human pick-a-lily that is our very own, Tony Esmond.
Fucking pick-a-lily. I knew you lived in the country, you carrot. I've known pick-a-lily for ages.
That's an old school chutney, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you like pick-a-lily? I like it.
I know. No. I prefer your standard pickle.
Really?
No, yeah. Pick-a-lily just looks like a jar of sick.
You just go to Nando's or something, the youth of today, don't they?
Well, free refills, that's all I've got to say. Welcome to the show. It's after a couple of weeks of being out and about and just general craziness, the boys are back in town, should we say. Which also means there isn't going to be any flashy editing on this episode or any little sound effects. Well, you never know with me. But yes, we're excited to be back. But we are not alone, because this week we're joined by a creator who we've talked about quite a few times on this show, in a nice way, obviously. And he's a long overdue guest. He's the creator behind the award-winning strip, The Penguins. It's Alan Henderson. Hello, Alan.
Greetings.
Alan, you're right.
Yeah, no, it's great to be here.
We won at the same awards, didn't we? Not cough, we won an award as well. But we won at Edinburgh, you won it for that. Is that right?
Yeah, that was the I won the best collected edition this year.
Nice. All right,
I won best humour comic the year before. So
okay.
I'm still one ahead of you on that count, but only just.
All right, fuck you.
Oh, Jesus. Right, that was Alan. He'll never be back on the show. Bye, Alan. No, well deserved, my friend. Well deserved.
Well, yeah. I just like the fact that I've been running a humor comic for 5 years now, three panel strip type thing, and yet you bring me on to talk about something else.
I was going to talk about that.
but while we're talking about Edinburgh, though, like you're obviously at the show. What was that like?
Edinburgh's a great show. I have a strong affinity with it. As I say, the Penguins have been running for 5 years, and the Edinburgh show has also been running for 5 years. Mm. It was primarily the impetus for me to take things off the web and put them into print and push that forward. James Lundy, who organises it, puts on a great show. It isn't your pure comic thing. It is more multimedia. But James has got a really strong comic background and always makes sure that... he has guests come over primarily from Europe, and it's a lot of people that have never been to the UK before. He goes out of his way to get that sort of stuff. But at the same time, you've got your Game of Thrones actors and all that sort of stuff. Mm. Being the location they use as well, it's quite big. So it's actually across two halls, which means that he's able to use that space really well. And in the other hall away from the sort of comic space and the retailing space. This year they had big displays of Lego, they had arcade games that were free for everybody to use, and they had a wrestling ring, which meant that they could put on wrestling matches at different points. Yeah. I didn't, no. Lycra is not flattering to me. But I'm sure if you wanted to sign up now for next year that you could throw in something.
Me and Prolix could tag team it. God, that'd be sexy, wouldn't it?
It'd be like the Mountain Men or something.
Unruly
hair and beard. Yeah.
They're like the Bushwhackers.
I've told you, haven't I? I'm like a German Shepherd with its tongue out.
Dear God.
Sarah took a few pictures of that awards thing, and there was a 5 foot picture of me on the screen.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
I didn't realise it was such a sexy show.
It's
a great show. Highly recommend it.
Nice. Well, we're definitely.
Where in Edinburgh is that now? Because I'm no Edinburgh a little bit. Is it quite central or is it?
It's at the International Conference Centre, right in the middle. So just off Lothian Road. 5 minute walk from Princess Street.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. Yeah.
We were saying on the show what a vibrant kind of comic scene there. Going on out there. It's just it's fantastic.
Even in Deadhead Comics.
Yeah.
I've been there. That is a scary shop, I've got to tell you.
I've known Gaff, the guy that runs that shop, for over 25 years now, probably. And he's a scary man. All right, so that's not fair. He's actually a lovely guy. You just have to make sure you find him sober.
Yeah, that's right. I like that. Good tradition of Scottish comics here, Sam. Yeah, got to.
He's Welsh. Yeah. He's Welsh. Is he? So I'm like, all right. But not, yeah, the Scottish scene is running really strong, both in Edinburgh and Glasgow and further afield. This past weekend was a big event held up in Glenrothes, organised by yes. Gary Erskine as well. Sadly, I couldn't make it, but it seems to have been doing great guns. So no, there's loads of people up here making loads of good books.
Do you know Demetris Zach, who did The Man in the Gutter?
You know, I don't actually, strange enough. Right. Or it's probably one of these people that I see on the scene, but I don't know him as an individual.
Yeah, okay, because Deadhead Comics features in that. I think the character turns up at the comic shop in that. Good comic, actually. Really liked it. Yeah, well worth a look.
Do you know where else you can find good comics?
Oh no,
you can find them on Comic House. Hey. We are the only show that will celebrate our sponsorship ads being seamlessly fed into the rest of the show. but we do love Comic House, and thank them very much for keeping the lights on in this show, helping us keep in comics. It's the place you want to go, comichouse.com, if you want to get lots of indie books. They love comics, and it's easy to see why. Creators can put their books onto the website, and you can buy hard copies direct from the creators, which is always good. But they've also got a little thing that, I don't know, I think quite a few people have heard of, haven't they? A thing called the Comic House app? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Netflix for comics.
It is indeed. It is. That can't say fairer than that. And no. But it's stocked full of brilliant comics all over the shop, including quite a few of ours here and there in some shape or form. But and they're updating it all the time. Dan, what have we got on there at the moment? Do you know?
So the most recent update includes The Hill, Red Sonja, The Vessel of Terror, Toxic Storm, Chicken Outfit, The Shadow of a Terrible Thing, and Lock and Key. I think we've already mentioned Lock and Key before, but it's on there again.
Lock and Key will always be a popular one, won't
it? But Chicken Outfit looks interesting. It's adults only. Which
is that the first thing you look for in a book, Dan?
Well, it's a seal of quality, isn't it? adults only.
That's true. Yeah, if it's for mature audiences, then
it's like an 18 rating on an 80s action film. So
you need that.
Yeah, there is. You know, mustache. Yeah. Surely the Mr. violence to women.
Yeah. Surely they've missed a trick as well, though. That rather than Chicken Outfit, that she'd gone for the male version, which would have been a cock outfit.
Yeah.
It's a sick.
Yeah. Dan definitely would have bought it then. But I know Comic House, for instance, they've got a lot of Dynamite books, and now a lot of Marcosia books are going on as well, aren't they?
They are.
So if you want to find out more and read loads of comics, because seriously, it's well worth it. They're really getting bigger and better all the time. If you go to comichouse.com to find out more about the app, if you want it, you can have a 14-day free trial. And if you want a subscription, it's only £3 a month, which is an absolute bargain. Like compared to some of the prices you pay
really
at a convention.
There's some comics on there that are more than £3. So and that's great, isn't it?
Yeah. So check out the books on there on Comic House, and then when you go to your next convention, pick up the actual books from the creators themselves. So there you go.
If they the creators have listed it on the site and on the app, you can actually purchase hard copies through the site.
So
it's all there.
They support indie comics. We support indie comics. We all just love each other. Calm yourselves.
I love myself.
Yeah, here we go.
Someone's got a... That was a bit harsh. Sorry, Tony.
It's all right, Dan.
But yes.
We're trying to find the reorder in the game because we've been away for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all go for Vince. I remember now.
Yeah, that's how it works now.
What?
Yep. Everyone take the piss out of Vince. Oh, yeah. Allow me to repeat on air the fact I tried to push you over during an interview you did. That may be still making me laugh.
Yes.
The look on your face as you sort of tried to right yourself.
This is the first actual sort of standard show after our appearance at Cardiff Independent Comics Expo.
By the way, you're calling it an appearance. Like we did a gig of some kind.
Oh, well, I kind of treat us like the Motley Crue of comics. Do you know what I mean? We're going.
It's always a show.
Yep. Like, we're just going around, causing chaos, pushing each other, throwing TVs out of hotel rooms. No, we don't do that. Basically, we sit behind the table and then grumble about how our feet hurt.
Yeah, my dogs are barking. Did you notice I did a review and in it I put my dogs are barking and my arse is meowing, because that made us laugh quite a lot. And then John cross-posted it and took that line out. God bless you, John. All about a family show. But,
yeah.
It did get worse than that, to be fair. That wasn't the only bit.
I can well imagine.
Yeah. Obviously, if you're a regular listener, you'll hear some of the great interviews that we had on last week's show, episode 152. If you haven't checked out yet, go back and listen, because we're not just talking about stuff on the day, but like genuinely interviewing creators about their books and stuff. So, and then we had a couple of new voices on the show that you might be hearing more of in the future, and like great creators, one and all. But there was more to the show and the day.
I knew it was going to be a class weekend when about 11:30 at night I found myself Nick Prolix and Mr. and Mrs. Olsen in a jazz club in Cardiff.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly.
You are classy, aren't you, Tony?
Is that the Sea of Culture or something, Cardiff? What did they say about it? Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, jazz club. He lives there, so it's got to be classy.
Do you love jazz, Tony? Because I know you love magazines about jazz, don't you? You love Jazz Mags.
I've got quite a few Jazz Mags here. I've got to collect a lot of 70s ones.
Nice. Yeah.
Mm. I like scales. I like when they play jazz scales or crab ladders, that sort of thing, you know.
Crab ladders?
Yeah, it's like a scale in jazz, isn't it? Do you not know about that one?
Is it? It just sounds like some sort of delicacy.
I think I'd rather pluck out my eyeballs and force them up my arse than go to another jazz club. Not a fan.
Really?
I've got strong feelings on the subject, what can I say?
That did go a bit strong. I've got to be honest with you. Yeah. I didn't expect to go there, but that's good.
Yeah.
I remember being in Amsterdam with some mates.
There we go. Buckle up, everyone.
We was in a jazz club.
Banana bar. I went to the banana bar in Amsterdam, and a lady wrote a postcard for me, and she didn't use her hands, and that is a true story. Oh. That was quite good handwriting.
Yeah.
It sounded like Dan was just a little bit sick.
But dear mum, having fun in Amsterdam.
Oh, and I really felt we've got back into the rhythm already.
You can just hear all those iPhones deleting.
Unsubscribe button.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. But yeah, Sice was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's good fun, mate. Great venue. Yeah, really looked up. Is really looked after. It said like a big sketching competition, which was good. And yeah, everyone was top form.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good fun.
Brilliant. And we, of course, it was a successful launch for issue 2 of our comic, which we'll talk a little bit more about at the end of the show.
Yeah.
But before we do. Do we need to mention anything else before we get stuck in with a juicy topic this week?
No, I don't think so. They're not doing Sice next year. I think they're skipping a year, aren't they? So,
but there are exciting plans afoot for next year in terms of conventions and stuff. So we'll hear more about that.
Yeah,
very soon.
Yeah.
There's another Comic Con in Wales, because someone was advertising Carl Urban is going to be there.
Oh, well, that
seems to be picking up a lot of traction.
Yeah, is it Wales alleged Comic Con? Yeah.
Oh, okay. One of those things.
An autograph fair thing. Yeah. Yeah.
I've always got time for Carl Urban though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When he comes around.
Yeah. 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 A little bit of urban warfare. Lovely.
He's in the boys, isn't he? They're filming the boys.
Yeah.
That's gonna be good.
Well, let's hope it's good.
Yeah.
No guarantees.
Just made
that
fucking Dread TV series.
Yeah. There's no movement on that, is there? I haven't heard anything about that for ages.
Yeah. Why announce things if you're not going to be able to show anything anytime soon?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's one of those things to try and drum up interest or potential backers or supporters.
Yeah.
Investors.
Yeah.
Just have a fucking whip round on Kickstarter or something. I'm sure fans...
Have a whip round.
Yeah, you know.
I'd like to announce the Awesome Comics TV series has now been greenlit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Who is it who's playing you, Tony? Is it Tom Selleck?
Me. I'm playing myself.
Oh, right.
Fat Russell Crowe is making a comeback.
On which digital channel will it be appearing?
Is Men and Motors still going?
Men and Motors.
Imagine my peer on Really.
Awesome. I don't look at any of the porn channels. Are there still porn channels on Sky? There will be on one of them, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Turner Classic Movies. What are you talking about?
Oh my God, yeah, now you're talking.
Oh, one subject I'd like to speak about, and it's something that our guest Al can join in on, I'm sure, is that I'm finding the price of small, not naming any names, so nobody panic, I'm finding the price of small press to be going a little bit up at the moment. We both, me and Vince, both encountered this weekend with stuff that we saw, and there was stuff that, I mean, we think we're a good deal at £3, but I think some people are maybe taking a piss a bit, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think the important thing is no one should undersell their work, because obviously a lot of work goes into comics. But also, I think...
It has to be competitive, doesn't it, as well? Yeah. You know.
It does need to be that balance as well, as you say. And it's because what I go in normally at 7 for my books, but they're 100 pages long.
So yeah, you're perfect bad as well, aren't you? So,
I don't feel that I'm killing it with that. But yeah, things have been creeping. I mean, partially that's because printing costs have started to creep up ever so slightly. Yeah. But I mean, Tony, you and I have talked about this elsewhere as well. The other thing that really annoys me is that, you know, if you're going to spend all that money on a book, you know, from buying it online, and then people post it out in the cheapest envelope possible.
I've had that a couple of times recently. Right, yeah, it's like banging about inside the envelope. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if you're going to put all the effort in and you're going to then charge whatever for it, then at least put the effort into the packaging as well.
I've got some of those card backed envelopes I send my stuff out in. I think you've got to protect it a little bit, haven't you?
We sent one to the States and it was in a cardboard backed envelope and it just turned up fucked, so gonna have to reconsider that in future.
It looked like they'd ripped that one open, didn't it, to be fair?
They might have done a checked it to see what's in it, because sometimes the customs do that. So
they clearly didn't look too closely.
So I've been lucky and found these little boxes that are great. But that's, you know, I'm putting it at E5, not at actual comic size. So
That's perfect fit for your book, isn't it? It works pretty well.
I was going to say, I feel kind of well, I'll charge a fair bit for Vanguard, but it's like I'm not making a great deal on that. It's just because the print cost is so bloody high. It's kind of hands tied. I feel reticent about printing anymore because the price I have to charge punters to get it. Do you know what I mean? Like you can buy a cheaper trade in the shop from the big two or someone else.
I mean, that's true, but you do like a very limited print run of your 200 page book. Now, I mean, to me, the people that read Vanguard, all the people that I know that have got it, are well pleased with it, love it.
Yeah.
And the quality's there, and like, you know, you'll throw in extra bits here, there, and everywhere. Like when we're at the table, you've got sketch, you know, people buy the book and you feel the need to give them lots of other stuff, which you don't really need.
Yeah, I always feel I want to kind of justify the price for kind of what I want to give that person a good deal for the money they're paying.
Yeah.
So sticking a print and some original artwork, some badges, and whatever I've got on the table.
I mean, it's hard to talk about it without naming names, isn't it, really? But I certainly I was hugely disappointed at one creator who charged completely over the odds for a book of theirs, and I thought, really? Yeah. You know, it's a very limited page count, small in format, and I thought this is too much, you know, compared to other prices there.
It's not like the bloody stuff you get with the A4 folded in half with a couple of staples, and they're charging for a fiver. And it's like, you fucking bang that on the work photocopier.
I mean, part of me thinks that you can't do that now. Do you know what I mean? It's like the competition's too high, the quality's too high. You know, you have to really go that extra mile to justify like charging that for something where you're not really getting that much for it. But obviously comics do take a lot of, we understand that they take a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, they're art, aren't they? You pay what you pay for art, I suppose, at the end of the day, don't you? But just sometimes I look at it and I think, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If someone kind of marked their what they were selling up as like a zine or a magazine or something, do you reckon that could charge a greater price than it would have been if you named the same product as a comic?
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? It's like the old graphic novel argument, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's suddenly worth more when it's a graphic novel. And also where you're selling it. I remember when we had Gareth on, who was talking about Found Forest Floor, which is a book, isn't it? He was saying, I remember how much it was now. Was it $12.99, $40.99? Yeah. And he'd taken it to a sort of authors group and they were going, good God, is that all you're selling this for?
Yeah.
You know, And yet he was a bit worried he was overpricing it. I personally don't think he was, but you know, I think it depends where you're selling it sometimes as well, isn't it? Yeah. You know, LCAF is in a couple of weeks, and you can bet your bottom dollar there's going to be a few prints there that are a little bit too expensive.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
I was going to say, something like LCAF and Thought Bubble would be the other interesting one. Where,
yeah.
To, you know, because you've got everybody laid out there to compare and contrast. And it will be, you know, what are you really trying to get away with for certain people? And, you know, I think you're right. It's sometimes also that, you know, somebody puts the word zine in front of it, or puts RhizoPrint as well, which again, I accept is a really difficult process and is really costly to set up and run. But, you know, it's, you've chosen to do that as your artistic choices. Yeah. I don't see why I necessarily need to pay five times as much because you've done it as a RhizoPrint version rather than something else. So, but again, that's, you know, you pay your money, you take your choice at the end of the day. Nobody's forcing us to buy these books. And I think it's...
I agree. Yeah. You know, it's the same as a painting on a wall, isn't it? You know, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some of those paintings on the walls we look at and think, how much did you fucking spend on that? Do you know what I mean? But art is art, I suppose. Yeah. I think the problem I have is a lot of these, especially, I hate to say the Gosh Comics crowd will moan about, you know, American comics and stuff like that, and they're too expensive. And then you go to their conventions and there's something that's, you know, 20 pages long and they're charging $5.99 for it. And I think, well, you know,
And I will say, like, I mean, Sice was a good example. Obviously, he's on the show last week with John Tucker, who's fast becoming one of my favourite people.
Your favourite person ever. He was hilarious as well, wasn't he?
Absolutely hilarious. But, like, literally, he had these little books that, you know, quite a few pages. I mean, Bold is an amazing book. How many pages is that, Tony? That's 16, 20, know. Something like that.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, got to be.
And
yeah.
They're all well-made, really well-made. These aren't, like, photocopy staple jobs. And he was selling them for, like, dirt cheap. I bought all of the books for a tenner on the day.
That's great.
And he did a sketch as well. Or?
And he did a sketch because I bought them all. Do you know what I mean? And I said, you know, you're almost undercharging. You know, he goes, I just want people to have the books.
Yeah.
He had a good day, though. He doubled his, because he did well sales-wise. I saw him post. Yeah. You know, so that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is great, yeah.
That's probably the reason.
Yeah.
One of the things that popped up this week, and I've seen him a fair bit more online, is newsprint comics.
Yeah.
Peter Cimetti from Alterna Comics, he tweeted out during the week, if you're an indie comic creator, self-published, self-distributed especially, and you could get your comic printed with glossy cover and a newsprint interior, and it would cost around 50 cents an issue with a minimum order of 500, would that be of interest to you? And reading into it, it looks like Alterna are going to offer that up as a print service to people who are interested. So 50 cents for 500 copies, and it goes all the way down to 40 cents for 4,000. So like, if you want 4,000 comics, that's a fucking lot. But for me, that's trying to get the bulk done and get them into people's hands as opposed to having small runs. And
That's an interesting case, certainly for US creators as well, who are going to some of these bigger shows.
Yeah.
You know, so they are going to buy more, you know, copies of their book, aren't they, really?
Yeah, I'm on the Alterna Comics mailer. I know they've been talking about that newsprint thing probably, I'm going to say, about a year.
Right, okay.
I mean, yeah.
They're looking in the next 2 months to kind of push that into making it active.
It's also a really interesting test that needs to be done somewhere, because is it a case of, if you're selling a £5 book at a show, and would you sell more at £3? I don't know if... You know, because I'm not entirely convinced that if we all took a pound off what we were charging, whether actually the sales would actually go up that much, because if at a show, you're restricted by the number of people that have come in through the door anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Don't get me wrong, I really miss newsprint as a format, and there are certain artists that always looked better in newsprint.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, Norm Brayfogle. In the early detective runs that he was on was stunning in newsprint. He was on glossy paper, and it just wasn't quite the same. I don't know.
The Alan Moore Swamp Things with Bissett and Tottlebin, I think, look great on that kind of paper as well. You know,
I've said it about the same with digital as well. You know, you get those old classic books.
That's like the next level up, isn't it? Almost. Yeah,
you really lose it in digital, but you see the original books, and they're just beautiful.
Yeah.
See, I feel like I would like the newsprint on single issue stuff. So it's almost disposable in a way. Doesn't matter if you stick it in your back pocket or whatever. And then when you want that story collected and you want it on your bookshelf, that's when you buy a trade with a glossy paper and what have you, and all the bits and bobs. For me, like, buying a comic for £3-4 a single issue, and then I can get the trade for like 15, which has got 5 or 6 issues in. That's kind of a bit of a no-brainer for me. There's loads of kind of single, I've got shelves of single issues sitting behind me, and it's like, I always go to the trades really to get stuff to read out. But also Eric Larson posted up stuff during the week, and he was comparing.
Oh, he did, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. The print between, he'd done a Spider-Man pinup, and one he was showing on the newsprint and one on the glossy paper. And a lot of the people were responding saying they preferred the newsprint one, but you have to have the different color setup for it to work on newsprint over the glossy stuff. I mean, the glossy stuff will hold the colors better, and it can deal with like this more subtleties, where the newsprint's got to be a bit kind of harsher. I think that's where the kind of the stark black and white stuff comes into its own on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The person we should be asking about this is Andy Cliff, because clearly Captain Cosmic, the paper quality that he used there, I thought that was perfect for the storyline that he produced there. Because again, it had that, it seemed to be one step up from newsprint, but it still had that sort of rough edge to it.
It created almost like a faux effect on it, didn't he? It was that's a good point.
So that I think is the sort of landing ground.
Right.
It's interesting though, because you said about that only so many people in a show will be going past the table to look at it. So kind of knocking the price down that much, will it affect it? That's certainly an interesting point. Interesting. There's a talk coming up, isn't it, about kind of like where we're going with the comic stuff, and maybe that is one of the things they could talk about. I mean, maybe a distributor of small press comics, when you sort of submit so much to them, to for them to take around shows or
Shane Chebsby used to do that.
He did. I remember that dude. Back. Yeah.
Small Press Zone, I think it was called.
Yeah, I remember that Bristol and stuff. Yeah.
I think it sounds like one of these things that's a great idea, but much like, you know, who manages the stock? Who owns it when it's gone into the central distribution place? And, you know, I think just the administration of it just became such a nightmare.
Yeah. I can imagine that's the main reason that kind of thing would fall down and has.
And I don't know whether we need it. I think there's some people might do. We don't. I mean, we do well, don't we? So I'm not these bragging blokes, but I think we do well enough. We don't need that, I think, because we are spread across the country and we do different conventions, and either it be together or separate. You know, I think it's different strokes for different folks, I think, around the small press. I think I don't want to be tied into, I've said this before, I don't want to be tied into a group of people who are all doing the same thing. I want to do my own thing.
It's definitely not a one size fits all. I mean, everyone's got a completely different situation going on.
I think that's when some of like these sort of movements or things can break down. I mean, they could have all the goodwill in the world, but it's the logistics and like too many cooks. Sometimes it comes down to that, you know, because even if you're trying to be fair to everyone, there's probably going to be a book that gets more, you know, views than another, and that creators probably go about have their nose put out because no one seems to be talking about their book.
Yeah, it's the old prettiest girl at the party scenario. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like that back to that.
I mean, we almost came across that when we was doing our comic. We said about the Kickstarter, and it's like, well, logistically, straight away, one of us is going to have to do all the work.
Yeah.
So,
and we don't want to do any work. That. So,
no,
that's exactly it.
Yeah. We're very lazy men.
We don't want to. Thank you for that. Yeah. We just get Mexican chair people in, won't we? Sort of thing. Yeah.
What?
What's that film where he has Mexican chair people come in? You not seen that?
No.
What's that? The guy Sacha Baron Cohen. What's the one? The model.
Oh,
he does.
Borat. Bruno. Not Borat. Yeah, Bruno.
Bruno. Where he does an interview with some starlet, and they don't have chairs, so he gets somebody.
He makes the
gardeners and tells them they're Mexican chair people. And she just sort of goes for it, and she's like, "Oh, okay." And sits on someone.
God.
Anyway. You know what's printed on cheap paper?
What's that?
The pulp magazines.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You know that they ran from between 1896 and the 1950s, and pulp derives from the cheap wood paper that they were printed on. Did you know that?
Is that... I mean, I would have thought... being a bit of a print nerd, knowing about paper and all that kind of thing, that's pulp has that correlation to me, like newspaper pulp and things like that. But I didn't know that was such a link to this that genre.
Yeah, that's where it derives its name from. And also, sadly, why so little of it really sort of lasted, because it was that sort of cheap paper. And I only bring this up because our guest, Alan, is a big fan of the pulp characters, aren't you, Alan?
Of the certain genre of the pulp. I think the other thing to be clear is that the pulp magazines, or the pulp books, were not just crime noir. And I think, you know, everyone thinks it's, or thinks of crime noir nowadays as being that piece, but clearly they covered everything from westerns, romance, war comics, horror, sci-fi, and, you know, even a little bit of the old soft porn type in there as well.
Here's a little pop quiz for you guys. And Alan, I'm gonna tell you to step out of this one because I think you'll know this. But here's a quiz: which recurring Marvel character started as a pulp character?
God damn it!
Human Torch?
No. He's actually part of the Marvel universe. So I'm not. The easy option there would say Conan or Colour stuff.
It's not Namor.
No. Close.
Are we? Is it a super character? Is that what we're talking?
Kind of. Yeah. Shall I put you out of your misery?
Yeah, put us out of misery.
Kazar.
Yeah.
I think he had two or three pulp books, back in the '40s. I think 30s or forties.
Because they had that sort of Jungle Tales was like really popular, wasn't it?
Savage Tales. Yeah. And he was then brought in to be a comic character. But you're right there, Al. So you got stuff like John Carter, Tarzan, Biggles, believe it or not. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, they were all pulp characters.
Yeah.
But the ones I'm gonna go straight for is, I'm gonna guess, is your favourite is The Shadow, is it?
It is, yes.
Yeah. How did that come about, mate? Because Shadow comics were not overly distributed in the UK, were they? Because they were DC, they were a bit sort of the I'm gonna say an originally DC, is that where you first spotted him?
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of how I got into The Shadow, so like most people's history with comics, I was in the comics, stepped away, came back again, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I sort of came back to comics in about 1988, 89.
Okay. It's a good time to come back, wasn't it? There's some crackers there.
And around about that time, so you walk back into a comic shop, having not been in for a while, you think, what are the jumping on points? And you look for, you know, what's issue one that's new out, either, you know, the couple issues were. And The Shadow Strikes by Gerard Jones and the late Eduardo Barreto was on the shelf. And so I picked that up and it fit right into my wheelhouse. And 40-odd issues later, they sadly cancelled it. But by that point, I was hooked on the character and all the back cast that went with it. And therefore was able to go backwards through time and pick up some of the earlier DC stuff as well, and everything else thereafter.
For people who don't know what The Shadow is, did you want to just give a brief rundown? Because I understand it, he was a big influence on Batman, so he predates Batman, doesn't he?
Predates Batman. So the Shadow was a character that was originally created actually for a radio show before anything else, and was the host of a radio show that was, again, that sort of crime noir, crime fiction piece. But ultimately, he's a character who is the millionaire by day, you know, crime fighter by night type stereotype, who has a large supporting cast of characters who work for him in terms of being the covert network that goes up against the crime networks.
Now, that was something that
the
Pulps played a bit with that, didn't they? Because I know, for example, Doc Savage had a similar sort of thing, and the Avenger. They had a similar little backstory, a bit back cast, didn't they?
Yeah, I think the real reason for that is you have to remember the pulps were being produced as a novel a month, or sometimes more than that. So, you know, if you think of the equivalent today, the things I think that are closest to the pulps today, the two things are Mills and Boone and Commando comics. So they're coming out on a regular basis. So if you have to remember with both Doc Savage and The Shadow, it was one writer that was producing all of them. You know, so
often in different names as well, weren't they? They used pen names and stuff. Yeah.
So if you're going to be doing that, if you're going to be writing a character where you're doing a whole novel every month, you're not going to want to write about that character. It's a lot easier to turn around and say, "Well, we've got a big big spread of back characters so I can focus on this one this month, this one this month, this one, you know, and go around it. Much in the same way that if you're doing proper Batman writing, you should be writing a story about Gordon, about Alfred, about, you know, all the different villains, rather than focusing on Batman. So it's a lot easier, you know, it's that piece. And I think that was very much the case, that that's why the Shadow has, you know, his group of characters, and similarly Doc Savage has his, and again, the Avenger also has an array of backcast. And I'm convinced that that's why they ended up having that array of back supporting characters with them to help them produce that.
So now here's another, just a quick pop quiz. I'm going to insert a pop quiz in here. Now, the Radio show ran for, it's literally hundreds of episodes, isn't it, I think? Mm. Is that right? There were hundreds of episodes, hundreds of stories. Who was the famous actor stroke director who played the Shadow for a big chunk of them? Anyone know?
I'm just going to take a shot in the dark and say Orson Welles. But
it was Orson Welles. It was. Yeah, it was. Yeah, famously, he just used to walk off the set of other things or his radio show and just, he wouldn't even have read the script. He'd just go and read it out. But because he's so good, do you know what I mean? It came across really well. They're actually still quite listenable to. You can get them for free downloads on podcasts and stuff like that.
Yeah. Some fascinating adverts thrown in every now and again as well. Halfway through the show, they'll stop and just one of the actors will read out an advert for Blue Coal or whatever. You know, it's fascinating for that sort of side of things,
That's brilliant.
Yeah, really good. And then, of course, everyone remembers it from the Alec Baldwin movie, I suppose. It's the most famous thing, isn't it? When Alec Baldwin wasn't quite as rotund as he is now.
Yeah.
All I'll say about that is that there are something like 200 novels that were written for The Shadow. And obviously, they made that movie. The problem was that across the books, The Shadow, because they were trying to build this mystical Eastern background storyline, all that sort of stuff, everyone thinks that Lamont Cranston is the alter ego of the Shadow, but there's also Kent Allard, which is another alter ego of the Shadow, and you go through this whole storyline of saying, well, did Kent Allard take over the storyline of Lamont Cranston to become the Shadow? Yeah. The problem with the movie is they tried to fit too much of it into the one piece, and they'd be much better trimming it all back and saying, right, here's a simple storyline and choose that. But I will say, if you turn the sound off and just look at that movie, it's beautiful to look at.
It does have some great moments, I think. Certainly at the beginning, it was that the Batman flavour, wasn't it? The way the Shadow sort of appears at the beginning is quality, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with the way the Shadow looked in the film.
Mike Clutter did all the design work.
We're going there in a second. I've got to tell you.
The films and kind of the time period is absolutely fantastic. I mean, to kind of draw a comic of that nowadays and you kind of constantly referencing all that stuff must be bloody difficult.
I think you need to treat the 1930s New York skyline as one of the characters if you're writing it properly.
Yeah.
And build that into it.
And the back alleys and the cabs and
all that sort of it's the disposition of saying that you've got the bright lights of uptown New York and the downtown, grittiness of it as well, and the docks and everything.
I mean, because I don't know too much about the character, and obviously they had this big, you know, lots of villains and stuff. It's quite a dark character from what I gather. And like he dispenses justice quite, you know, he's quite brutal.
Very black and white.
Did he kill a lot of his villains at the beginning? Because that could, you know, did he kill a lot?
Yes, is the short answer to that. With the exception of some of the big titled characters like the Shimmering Cans or whatever, so you could get them repeating. But you know, the point is that justice was dealt. He is also the executioner at that point. Feel like that's one thing it steers away from where Batman went, but it was very much.
But that's where Batman started, wasn't it? I think they started Shadow because Batman started having guns on him, didn't he? He had a couple of guns on him to start with. Yeah,
they killed the Joker in the first appearance, and then they retconned that.
Yeah, right. Okay,
yeah, that's true.
He stabs the Joker, and then it was such a big fan hit that they brought him back.
The weird thing is, the very first Shadow story, the very start of it, is actually a life saving element. Because the very first book actually introduces the character Harry Vincent, which is one of the key sub-characters that supports the Shadow. And the opening sequence is all about him wanting to commit suicide, jumping off the Brooklyn Bridge, and the Shadow saving him and saying, I now own your life. You are now working for me.
Because he's kind of the action hero element of it on occasion, isn't he? Yeah. He features quite heavily in the one I sent you, the Kaluta one. I sent you the picture of it earlier. What was it? What's the one on that?
1941.
Yeah, he's quite heavy in that, isn't he? I think.
Yeah.
So when did this kind of thing of not, heroes not killing villains? Maybe it's a bit off topic, suddenly come into kind of prominence, because I remember when I was reading comics.
The Innocent, surely, isn't it? Isn't it? It must be there. Is it?
When I was like 80s, all I can remember is like the good guys never killed the bad guys.
Mm. Yeah.
Even it's the stuff like back after G.I. Joe. Like,
after the Seduction of the Innocent report.
It would have been,
I reckon it's got to have been. Because I think all kinds of rules came out then, didn't they? About what you were and what you
the comics code changed everything, didn't it, really?
They've tried to fucking bring shit like that relatively recently. It's like, you're fucking smoking crack. Like, comics have got not as big a draw as what's always kind of thrown at them.
Mm. Yeah.
It's video games. That's what makes people into mass murderers.
Right, Al, next question. You get to name your top three shadow artists. Now, for those that don't know, Alan, you collect commissions of the shadow. Am I right in saying that?
Yes.
That's one way of putting it. Bloody hell.
Yeah, you also live in a house made of gold, clearly. But here's the two categories. One, artists who have previously drawn them in comics, and I'm going to ask you for a couple of names of people you'd like to see draw them in the comic. So who are your top? Let's get a top three out of you.
Firstly, in terms of the House of Gold, I started collecting sketches way back in the very early 2000s when it was a different world and things were a lot cheaper than they were. Yeah. In terms of artists that have drawn the shadow, that Michael Kaluta to me is the top one there. Is a woefully underrated artist in terms of his comic work.
He used to be a studio partner with Barry Windsor-Smith and Jeffrey Catherine Jones, and was it Wrightson was in the studio with them as well, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. Wrightson and Kaluta, actually, some of the work that was done on Swamp Thing and some of the work that was done in The Shadow, they were actually, one was penciling it, the other was inking it, and it just kind of got... So a lot of the early Shadow books from 1972 were actually, or 73, I should say, were actually, the backgrounds and stuff were done by Wrightson.
Oh, I never knew that. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah. For anyone, there's a book called, is it called The Studio?
It's called The Studio,
book, which is about the four artists, isn't it? Yeah.
If you can find a copy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a very battered and bruised version that was all I was able to find at a price I was willing to pay. Yeah. From that side.
I got lent a movie by Lambo a couple of years ago of a documentary about Jeffrey Catherine Jones, and he's an incredible, or she later in their life is an incredible talent, and it's probably the saddest film I think I've ever seen. It's sort of hugely underappreciated, you know.
Yeah,
really good. Okay, who's second?
Second in terms of, well, you know what, I'm going to stick with that same era and say Frank Robbins.
Good man, I love Frank Robbins. Yeah, I first found him in his Cap issues. I think it's where I first saw him. He drew a few issues of Captain America, didn't he, prior to Kirby coming back. And I loved that stuff.
And his work on Johnny Hazard is stunning. That's great from that sort of side of things. So, you know, those are certainly people that who have done the book before.
Robbins followed Kaluta on the DC run, didn't he, in the 70s. Is that right?
Yes. The third in terms of artists who worked on the book, but I'd actually go back to Eduardo Barreto, who, you know, artist of the 80s and 90s, who again was an Argentinian journeyman in terms of comic artists, as often we find, but properly hit the mark as far as I was concerned, and probably produced my favourite cover of all time, which is from that series, which is the Shadow standing behind a big radio microphone of the time. That was that.
Right. For those that don't know, you've missed a few big names out there. It's a hard choice out, isn't it? Because you got Chaykin has drawn some great shadow stuff. Sinkovich has also drawn some good shadow stuff as well, hasn't he? And probably my favourite is Matt Wagner. You might decide not, but I just love that sort of retro feel he gives him.
Definitely. Kyle Baker is obviously the other one as well.
Yes, which
is a slightly different take, but it's a fairly appropriate one to do so.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, right. So who would you get? Give us a couple of names of people you would love to see drawing it now.
You mean other than Mr. Hunt and Mr. Butcher?
Yes.
You know what? I'm more than happy to go. Actually, one of the people I'd love to see do it is Jock.
The shadows, isn't he? And the literal shadows. I think for me,
I'm just saying names off the top of my head here because some of these artists may have actually done it. But I think Eduardo Risso would do a very good.
Yeah. Good shout.
So I spoke to. I got a Risso sketch way back in one of the NYCCs that we did about 10 years ago now. Right. And I was speaking to his writing partner of the time, Brian.
Azzarello. Excuse
me. Azzarello. Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, they'd actually tried to do The Shadow as a book about the same time as they were doing 100 Bullets. Because he was, and Azzarello was really into it to want to do it. It just never came to be. And I think that is an absolute crime. It would have been beautiful.
Been so good. So
I think it's those people who know how to use ink. You're right.
There's a certain eye to design as well, because you've got. For me, there's a good use of shadows and black, but also red, because that.
The other two people that I throw into that mix in, one would be Dave Johnson.
One of my favourite artists.
And Michael Cho would be the other as well. Quite different. But again, because of the color palette he uses and the way that he does that sort of minimalist but still thing, those are sort of the people that I think I would love to see do something.
Are there any indie artists or small press artists that you've seen?
I've got a couple of English names, if that counts.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm. I'm going to say it's almost a fucking legal offence that David Lloyd hasn't drawn him. I think in his V for Vendetta style, I think that would be amazing.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see Brian Talbot do it as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm. Well, when you said they haven't drawn him, they have drawn him.
You've drawn him for you. They've drawn him for you. Have they? Yeah. Well, the other one I was going to mention is the one I definitely know is drawn for you, because I saw that he put up a commission list and I went, Alan, you need to get on board this. And you got and we'll be mentioning him later, you got a Tim Truman as well, didn't you?
Yes, yeah.
Nice.
So, I also keep talking about my collection. The whole thing is up on comicartfans.com, which is a site that I thoroughly recommend to anybody to dig around on. So feel free to check out comicartfans.com and just find me.
Stuff on there,
and I will say on the record, Alan, from me and Dan, we're very honoured that you asked to do
this.
Because certainly The Shadow is a character that for me has such a visual presence that it's just fun to work on a character like that. I think.
Yeah, you can go nuts with the scarf as well, can't you?
Yeah.
But
for me, one of the interesting things, everyone will always think of the scarf, and sometimes you see a scarf that's almost like Spawn's cape. It's that, like, crazy. Yeah. But it's the hat. There's so many different ways of, like, the way that hat looks. That was one of the trickiest things for me, is how to get that hat looking right. Because it's not your standard trilby or anything like that, is it?
No, it's a fedora, which is slightly bigger.
That's almost a character in itself. You know, if you get like one bit of that wrong, he just looks completely off.
Yeah, you're right. You get the nose wrong. I know what you mean. Yeah. You need to. Yeah. We need to have a British version with a bowler hat and a London version, don't we? Bowler hat. Yeah.
Listen, Big Ben, no man.
Yes.
It's kind of there anyway. But it's,
yeah.
But you're interesting about saying that it's a character that has that all that complexity. The other thing that I always think is really good, if anyone is collecting sketches and doing a theme, is to be able to say, if you're asking for a sketch, can you describe the character in three bullets? Because that, you will meet artists who don't know what they're drawing. Yeah. You still have reference, but you still want, And The Shadow is one of those ones that you can do really easy, because it's big hat, big nose, big scarf. And that's it. Yeah. Feel free to draw whatever you like. Yeah.
Could be a snowman, though, to be fair.
Carrot for the nose.
And there's probably an appearance in Mad Magazine that looks exactly like that. And it's, and that's why it's one of the things, I think that's I really like about collecting the or the way I built my collection up, is to say that whole thing about saying, yes, it's the same character done over and over, but it's got all the options for, you know, for each artist to interpret as they see fit or to do their thing.
Yeah.
You know, so somebody like Roger Langridge, who did some really funny pieces for me that are, you know, in that sort of style as well, but it's still the shadow.
Yeah. Did you ever see Lemming's print? He did a shadow print.
That was the cover that he did for one
Dynamite.
Of the covers for one of the Dynamites.
Yeah.
Where I was gutted that he'd actually originally drawn it in digital because I was trying to get him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but see, he also did a very nice commission for me as well. So, you know, again, I can't complain.
Yeah.
And it's but yeah, the card trick that he did with his
it looks great,
was lovely. Yeah.
Is there anyone you're missing? Is it anyone you really would like to get from? Have you got a Gabriel Hardman one?
No.
He'd be good.
I actually don't have a Zinkevich. So Zinkevich is probably the big.
Have you got a car to sell
for me? Well, this is the other thing. I'm not precious about getting a big commission from some of these people. I miss the days of the simple free sketch.
Right? Yeah.
Where because one of the things if anyone buys from me at a show, I will always sketch inside the book. It will only take me, you know, 30 seconds or a minute to do. But I, you know, the number of people's faces who light up because you at least made that effort. And that, to me, is all I'm looking for from some of these people. I'm not looking necessarily to say, oh, I want a full-blown commission. I would quite happily say, draw me something that takes 30 seconds. The person that was best at that was Darwin Cook, would rattle through a queue, and everyone would get something. Most people, it's only like 4 or 5 lines, but you know exactly what it is, and it looks perfect on the page.
I was going to say Steve Dillon was very, very like that as well. He could, you know, it was effortless, like pen straight on paper, no sort of, you know, blue pencil. Yeah, definitely.
Dave Gibbons does it as well, actually.
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
but you know that, and that to me is enough. So you know, any of these people that, you know, I quite happily go in and get that. I'm not going to turn down the bigger opportunity if it was there and affordable, but yeah, no, getting the right person at the right time. As I say, I've been very lucky to get a lot of the stuff early on in my collecting activities where things were cheaper and things were easier to do like that.
Yeah.
Like back in the old Bristol days where, you know, you also had loads of Americans coming over as well at that point.
Yeah.
Which is why now a lot of the stuff that I'm getting to add to that sort of art collection side is to focus on the British small press scene, where it is a case of I'd rather spend 20, 30, 50 pounds with somebody who's British small press who's then going to put in whatever level of effort rather than spend the £300, £400 or whatever it is nowadays for certain people at a convention where you're like going, you've knocked that out in whatever, and you know, it'd be much better for you to be sitting at the right desk at the right height and all that sort of stuff. So there's, you know, I think that's where, again, it's horses, you know, it's choosing the right horse for the right course and saying, you know, let's put back into that level of the community properly.
Yeah, I get you. It's really interesting. I tend to do themed years. So I think one year I did Captain Britain, and then the next year I did Old School Valiant and stuff like that. So I really like having like maybe 5 or 6 of it. You can look at him, and it makes it more interesting for people to look at. If you do post them online, it's a different approach.
What are you doing this year, Tony?
I haven't really decided actually, mate, because I'm not doing New York this year.
Ah, right.
But I'm you know, I've got an intention to. I must do something for Thought Bubble and Nottingham and all that sort of thing. I don't know actually. Good idea. I don't know yet. Yeah.
The other one that I really enjoyed when I was running with the other books was the Penguin. And again, that's because it's, you know, everybody knows what it is, but everyone has their own take, and there's so many different styles and designs.
Yeah.
You know, so you can then go, you know, do whatever you think the Penguin should be. And again, it gives that opportunity for people to explore what they want to explore, or the artist to explore what they want to explore.
Yeah. Mm. It's a bit like Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor's had so many phases. He's been around, you know, he's had a sort of exoskeleton, he's had a sort of a suit with pouches on, he's been the mayor, he's had all sorts of things going on, isn't he? You know, it'd be interesting to see. Yeah.
The problem with someone like Lex Luthor, if somebody's just going to do a quick head sketch, where's the difference between that and Professor X?
Yeah.
The eyebrows. If you're old school, it'll be the eyebrows.
But that's the sort of thing. Yeah.
Okay. Funny you should mention the penguin. Should we move on, chaps?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, there's a movie called The Hurt.
I didn't even mean that segue, but that's right.
Yeah, we jumped
crushing on the segues, Tony.
Yeah, thank you. Do you remember the movie The Hurt Locker? Has anyone seen that?
Yeah.
And there's a bit in it where the main guy, Hawkeye, let's just call him Hawkeye, meets one of the generals, and the general says to him, "How many bombs have you defused?" And he goes, "Oh, you know, a few." And he says, "Come on, how many?" And he tells him, and he says, "You're a beast." And I want to say this to Alan. Alan, how many strips have you done now for the Penguin?
About 1,500.
You're a fucking nutter,
beast,
aren't you? Now, I see them every day online, and I think, how is he doing this every day? I mean, where do you find the time to do it? Not only to do that, but to come up with a particular pun.
Yeah, that's pun.
Well, I'm cheating a little bit at the moment because I was in New York last weekend with my good friend Bob Turner. And the advantage of now having over 1,000 or let's say near 1,500 is that if, now and again you can go back into the files and regurgitate. So what some people are seeing just now what was from a few years back coming out again, so that's fine. Which, yeah, that's the way it is. In terms of I don't really have an artist background. I did technical drawing at school as my sort of specialty, which means a lot of the layouts and all that sort of stuff, everything's measured, which means it's, you know, I follow that sort of speed. But that means that I've also created a sort of language in terms of how I put together the actual penguins. Okay. So there's so many things you can do with the eyes, so many things you can do with the beaks, so many different things you can do with the arms. And then you can say, well, pick and choose from each of those and put them all together. And that's, you know, that's what that penguin is going to be in that particular panel. Something very similar that Tom Gold did with a robot book that he was producing, where he basically produced pages of heads, pages of bodies, and pages of legs, and said, right, I just, you know, randomly select from each page to put together, and there's a new robot. And that's, you know, I kind of follow a similar technique to how I actually get down to drawing the actual penguins. So putting the actual strip together on a given evening isn't that bad, and I try to stay a week ahead in terms of drawing them.
Right. Yeah.
In terms of where do all the puns from and where do all the jokes come from, I beg, steal and borrow from wherever. I also try to put together the little themes every now and again, where so I might turn around and write the word or see something about a circus, write down circus on a bit of paper, and then say, right, what, and then do a sort of mind map thing where, you know, what the things you would find at a circus. Well, you'd find an acrobat, all right, what can I do about that? Or you'd find clowns, all right, I can do two or three things about clowns, and, you know, and then sort of build up that spider's web and then say, right, that's fine, I can then do maybe 10 strips in total on circus related items and actually just build it up from that. And just the other thing is also to try and say that it's about creating rhythm with three panel strips.
It really is, isn't it? We're going to get onto that. Yeah, you got a setup and then you got a joke at the end. It's not an easy task, is it? You know,
Well, the more important thing as well is because you want to establish a rhythm so that every now and again you can break the rhythm.
Okay. Yeah.
And that works particularly well when you put it back into the books or if you're reading lots of them. And that's because you end up, not every joke's going to be laugh out loud funny. And it's about sometimes just keeping the person rolling along, sniggering, so that you can then trip them so that the every, I don't know, seventh, eighth strip is the laugh out funny one, which is the reason that you've broken the rhythm that you've established, and that's what makes it easier to do.
Yeah.
I think one of the best examples of that is there's the, you know, the four panel strip that I did that was tell me more about this game you call Tetris, which is L-shaped in terms of the four panels. Now, on its own, that makes no sense and isn't really that funny. But because you've got the reader going, I'm used to three panels, I'm used to three panels, I'm used to three panels, bang, trip on the fourth panel, and suddenly the fourth panel becomes even funnier because it's not unexpected and that sort of side. So that to me is one of the big things about doing it, is about, you know, the rhythm and then breaking the rhythm so that you can, you know, you can push the panels.
Yeah. I have to notice that you also you play with the reader, so you break the fourth wall, as it were, an awful lot, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. Do you I mean, when I did a newspaper strip story for a year on it, and I would write, occasionally I'd go, oh, fuck me, I'm only one behind sending it to the artist. So I sometimes would like write five in a day and then sit back for 5 days, because you almost need like that little refresh of the brain, don't you, to sort of, do you find that at
definitely? I will often write down a big long list of things that, or of the ideas, and have them sit there. And I think it needs that time to percolate as well, because you've got the idea, and then say, right, actually, I now know how to write that in terms of three panels, which, you know, when you first come up with the idea, you might not. So I think one of the ones recently was about, if I was a budgerigar, I couldn't look myself in the mirror. Or something like
that. Yes, I saw that. Yeah, I saw that the other day.
And again, that sat for a while on that list of going, well, hang on, what's the actual thing there? What is the actual joke? Is it this, or is it that, or is it the other? And then, you know, it's a case of, right, fine, I was now happy with what it was going to be, and therefore I wrote it in the way that I did. But it is that case of have the list, let it sit, so that when you get to it, you can say, right, I now know how to do that one, and get that one out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, what else have you got planned? Is this just going to go on? Have you got loads still in the bank? Have you, or, you know?
No. I go through periods of, oh, that list's getting very short. That list's getting very, very short. And luckily, every now and again, I've got, oh, there's a new seam of, gold. I don't know, is there something to behind? Yeah. And go through that. It's weird, because what I have found in terms of doing the Penguins for as long now, it causes me great difficulty to work on other things.
Really?
You know, right. If you try to work on this basis of going, oh, I need to keep producing, anytime you get a new idea, or anytime I get a new idea, the first thing I always do is penguinize it.
Okay.
Right, okay.
And that's, you know, you suddenly go, oh, well, that it works for the Penguins, so why would I do it as something else? I forced myself a couple of years back to do some, you know, some other work in a book that, which was photocopied and stapled together and put out on that basis.
For a tenner.
It actually went out free with everybody that got the first Kickstarter with it.
Okay.
But it was one of those, it has a 6-page story in it about, that features pigeons rather than penguins. But again, it was that whole basis of saying I need to step away from the, you know, but I as I say, it does cause me great issues at this point to turn around and say, right, I want to go do something else. But there's so much, I don't know how to end the Penguins.
I've got an image of you on top of a tower block, just on your knees screaming at the sky, saying, I've broken free, I've done one with pigeons. You know, it's all they've got, but, you, do you think? Yeah.
But no, as I say, so I don't know how to finish it in some ways. I hope to be able to keep going with it for some time more.
Well, I'm enjoying it, mate. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I always try and share it whenever I see it pop up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Where do you find you get the most traction from it, from a sort of point of view of social media? Because your first point of call is, I'm going to say, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Is that right?
And I still use Tumblr, and I'm one of the few people in the world that does.
Right. Okay.
But actually, one of the reasons for putting it in Tumblr is it's easier to search the hashtags on Tumblr. So if I'm trying to find an old one, I actually find it easier to find on Tumblr. Where do I get the biggest traction? I can tell the different social groups that follow me on different social media.
Okay.
In that, a lot of my references, particularly when it comes to music and film, is more of your era, Tony, than it is the rest of the callers. Yeah. And so I can tell that if I get lots of likes on Facebook, I'll get fewer likes on Instagram. Or if I get lots of likes on Instagram, I'll get fewer likes on Facebook.
Interesting.
It's that sort of, and it is a case of, I do think it just comes down to the age groups that are following me on those different different platforms. Which is, you know, not unsurprising in some ways. So, you know, it does quite well from that sort of perspective of saying that does mean you can hit this, you know, you can put a joke out and you'll know it'll work somewhere. And you have to, you know, if you're putting this sort of stuff out, you know that not everything's going to work, and it's certainly not going to work for everybody. So you just have to accept the punches as they roll. And sometimes, you know, I've got some that I've put out that I've thought have been really funny, and you know, the tumbleweed has followed it.
Yeah, that's my life.
You know, there's others that I put out and gone, well, it fills a day, and it's taken off. Or what? And you're like, so I don't try to overanalyze that. Not least, I don't want to be writing for just for the audience. I want to be writing it for myself and doing it for myself.
Of course. Yeah.
And I think if you start to go down the rabbit hole saying, let's try to produce the thing that will get the most likes.
You'll
end up not doing it because
we talk about that a lot. That's definitely not the way to go, is it?
It just won't work. So, you know, you just have to, you know. And again, so if I'm coming out from the perspective of saying that the body of work is more important than the individual elements.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then you've done the route of collecting it and then kickstarting the collections. But is there added material in the collections, is there?
No.
Right.
There isn't. Let me think that one through. So I've done the first five books I just did off my own back and sold them through various conventions, whatever. So the first time I went to Kickstarter was when I produced what I called the Treasury Edition, which pulled together the first four collected books back together. So into that, there were things that went into that book that had appeared online, but perhaps hadn't been in some of the previous collected books.
Okay.
So there was a lot of that was done, and that produced the Treasury Edition, which is the A4 book, 150-odd pages long, and it's got the first 500 strips in it.
Nice.
Plus a bit more. So that went quite well. And as part of that as well, what I did produce with the Kickstarter was a bunch of prints that meant that certain things were done in colour that then, you know, hadn't been printed in colour before. And then each time I've done the Kickstarter after that, it's been back to being the smaller edition books, which are sort of A5 landscape and only 100 pages long. They are, yeah, the material in them is just whatever, you know, wherever we've got to in terms of the most recent sets of collections. And, you know, what I've done with the Kickstarter elements is said, right, you're going to get prints that other people aren't necessarily going to see, or you're going to get badges that other people aren't going to see. And then I suppose in the very most recent Kickstarter as well, where I'd managed to reach whatever total was needed, that I did what I called the expansion pack, which was to shove in a little book as well, which did end up collecting together some of the commissions and pieces, which again had never been in print before, but most of which had appeared online. It's a weird one in some ways, because Dan will feel this as well. You know, you're giving the milk away and then asking people to buy the cow. So it's that weird sort of, you know, going, well, you've read all this.
10 years ago, if you'd said that to people, they'd go, well, that won't work. But it does work. We're not 100% sure why, but it does seem to work, doesn't it? You know.
And I guess, as I say, you know, I've tried to do this in terms of how I've put these books together. They are more or less exactly in order as they appear online. I fiddle with it a little bit to put certain themes together and build a little bit of pacing. But I tried to make it that all these books can be picked up, open at any page to be read and put down again, you know, not having read the whole book, and people going, oh, that's my 30 seconds of amusement.
Yeah.
And
it's that perfect sort of coffee table sort of ingredient, isn't it?
I'm going to say toilet book.
It was one of the it's a pull quote that's on the back of one of the books, which, and it was actually said to me at an event where somebody turned and said, oh, this would be ideal for the downstairs toilet. And I'm like, you know, and I think that's a compliment.
It
also shows the sort of people that read my stuff, and it's they have a downstairs toilet.
That's what it's like in Edinburgh.
But I think what she meant by that was the fact that this is entirely inoffensive. I don't mind if a guest reads this.
Yeah.
It has that ability to be picked up, looked at, and put down again, and again opened at any page. And while you can do that with the online element, it's not as easy to do.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, I've got somebody that started following me on Instagram over the last couple of weeks, who's clearly spending every day dipping a little bit further back and dipping a little bit, because they keep getting these likes further and further back in the chain, which is great. But it's, you know, that's, it's an interesting take that they're doing. It's a comic book artist from or a small person from the States who's, you know, just doing that thing, which is fine. But it's, you know, it's that interesting piece of going, it's I find it easier to pick up a book and do that rather than than troll through the online page.
Yeah, people live online now, don't they? Sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, saying the three, going back to the three act, three panel comic, there's a hell of a lot of people that try it, and I've got to say, not many people do it well. There's a couple of groups, some sort of in, and they share stuff on that, and it's just like, where's the joke here? I don't mean to be rude to these people, but it's kind of like you kind of got to work on it. Like the strength of the comic is on the fucking the pun or the joke.
Yeah.
The art will only carry it so far. But
it's all about the pacing and the rhythm, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Really.
When
you've
got three panels, you can't fuck around at all.
Yeah.
It's very
every now and again, I try to put a little bit of extra effort in one of the panels art wise, or if I'm doing one of the bigger Sunday, what I call a Sunday strip, where I'll do a A4 type full thing. I'll put more effort into something like that. But I also think, actually, if you're doing a three panel strip, there's something to be said for stripping back the art. And saying that's not what's, you know, it needs to be enough there to tell the story, but not an awful lot more.
Yeah.
If you look at things like Garfield or Dilbert or those, or even Peanuts, the actual, obviously the quality of the art is amazing, but it's really good because it's really simple. And the best of all being, Calvin and Hobbes, where if you actually look at the way that Calvin and Hobbes are drawn, there's often very little there, but it tells exactly everything you need to know with as little as possible.
Yeah, and you do find your own sort of comedic rhythm, I think, because obviously, my dip into that pool was when I did Stalkerville, which was a four panel thing. But I definitely found that I would be quite a fan of having the panel without any words, and then the next panel after that is the punchline. Do you know what I mean? That uncomfortable comedic pause.
Yeah.
And there's some people, I think, dare I say, need to do a bit more research in terms of, I mean, when I did this, and I'm sure you're the same, Alan, I had already had years of reading, like you say, Garfield, Peanuts, Frank Cho's Liberty Meadows. You know, there was all these influences. I wasn't doing the same thing, it wasn't the same stories, but I certainly knew what worked for me in terms of that comedic sort of joke telling. Well, some people think they can just pick it up and do it and it's easy, but comics aren't easy.
Oh god, no.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like that's kind of one of the harder fucking things to do is the three panel stuff.
Yeah,
like really take my hat off to it.
You do a hard job, Alan, and you do it well.
There's a couple of times I thought I'll give that a go, and then thought, what should I do? And then just come up empty. So I won't do that then.
Yeah.
So what's funny?
And that's where I think the whole thing about writing it down and letting it, mature for a bit before you actually then get to it is the way to deal with that. But it's, as I say, I tip my hat more to people who can do the long form piece, because it's, to me, I'm forever compressing, which leaves me going, well, if I want to expand, how do I do that and go the other way? And that's why.
And that fascinates me on that newspaper strip level as well. When I see people doing the longer form stories like that, and you do see it with a lot of webcomics as well, they're using the same sort of structure of a three panel sort of, landscape sort of grid, but they're telling an ongoing serious story sometimes. That fascinates me, because that's a real challenge.
Yeah, that is a real class act, isn't it, to that?
Yeah.
We tried it with Alag when we did a strip, like a barbarian strip, and we tried to tell a story of it. We parodied Alice in Wonderland and called it Alag's Adventures in Cunnyland, and then he travelled through a lady's vagina for a week. And it is quite hard keeping it going. Do you know what I mean? Keeping the links when you've only got three panels, link to the next one's quite difficult.
You don't have the joy of a page turn. Every as soon as a person sees it, they see the beginning, middle, end, and a cliffhanger, which has to get you onto the next panel. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's difficult stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's once or twice I've done a little bit of longer storyline stuff with the PG, but again, it's always been that element of trying to still keep it, each one stands on its own. So I did a whole storyline at one point where they went on strike, and it was a case of then redrawing the characters as, basically myself in a penguin costume. But then ever again, but it was that thing about always going back to them to be, you know, they're on the sidelines doing whatever they're wanting to do, which includes possibly my favourite strip, which is the one of them standing with a megaphone in front of a couple of others going, you know, what do we want? Four panels. Where do we want them? To be continued. Which was the... and it is that sort of thing going, well, yeah, it is the strike. And this is the sex scene that is the strike. But each story, you know, each panel or each three strip panel strip on its own still needs to stand. Mm. And it is that interesting balance again of trying to get that through of saying, how do you make sure that you can have the person who's reading this for the first time? It's an interesting piece. And as I say, you know, where I measure myself for a lot of time is saying, you know, am I better than what's in the Metro that day? And
if I am,
I'm winning that day, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got to tell you, from the quality in the Metro, you're probably winning most days. Not doing you down, my friend, but yeah.
Nemi still running that?
Oh God, I don't know. The least funny cartoon strip ever in the history of the world. Yeah. That's actually quite saucy. I looked at that in Sweden because I think it's a Swedish strip. I looked at it in Sweden, and that's a little bit lively sometimes.
Yeah, they cut out all the boobage in the UK one. Which
was a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a shame.
So it actually might be a really good strip. It's just that the translation into English isn't
it's
right.
True.
That,
yeah.
It could be the problem. Yeah.
Puns don't work well in translation, do they?
I mean, what was ran in fucking the sun with the married couple? And basically the woman had
George and Lynn.
Yeah, I mean, that coasted on Lynn's breasts for years.
Yeah, I did as well.
Oh,
see, this is the other challenge I put through. Because I always refer to the Penguin as the PG, that's, you know, I've always tried to keep it PG as well.
Right, yeah. Okay.
There's a handful of things where people have suggested I have, you know, stepped up to the line. There was the infamous cucumber joke, and that was, you know, and there's that sort of thing. But, you know, again, that's the other thing. I'm putting those restrictions around myself to say I want it to be relatively family friendly. So, you know,
it's, you need it for the downstairs loo for all the Hampstead crowd reading it. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Cool. Have you got a downstairs loo, Dan?
No, I just got the one. I'm poor, I've only got the one toilet. Well, unless you consider the garden.
The great pit in the garden.
It was a couple of weeks back. I was caught short, and I was like, "Look, I may have to do this." It was all right in the end. Shot I thought I'm caught fucking short, and I was like, "This is real dodgy territory time." That's the story for off air.
Okay, far be it from us. Yeah.
I was halfway digging the pit down, and then I was like, "Bathroom's free."
But I've dug the hole now.
The hole's there. The hole's there.
The shame hole, which is also another
right in the middle of the lawn.
Right in the front garden.
I love that you probably just took a paper out with you as well.
It's in a couple of months' time. You said that rose is doing really well. How's that?
The neighbour comes out or does a double take. So you're right. Yeah.
Everyone does it. Don't look at me.
So I'm just putting the bins out. So yeah, I'll get rid of some rubbish too.
Have you got any toilet paper?
At least that toilet doesn't talk to you like the ones on Virgin trains. Oh, we've really got off subject now, haven't we?
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. So, anyway, I knew this conversation was going to go in all angles. But from pulp to humour,
really good
comics. Yeah. Brilliant stuff, cool. Alan. Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, we knew you were going to be a good guest.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. We just need Turner on as well now.
Yes, that'd be the interesting one. Yep.
Yeah. Do you have a good time in New York, man? Do you do many comic shops and all that sort of thing, or?
Yeah, we were at the Five Points Festival.
Oh yeah, yeah, good.
Which is more of a Japanese toy festival with a little bit of comics this year since it moved out to Brooklyn. Yeah, it was great. It sadly was a little bit warm in New York for those of us that are used to being north of the wall. you know, when you're talking 30 degrees and 70% humidity,
I can't imagine Bob was complaining, was he? It'd be all right, wouldn't he?
I'm going to take the fifth on that one. And But no, we did the usual trips to Midtown and at the lake as well.
Isn't Jim Hanley's a sad place now?
You know what? I didn't even go.
No, it's such a shame.
I have such good memories of the old. In fact, it's moved twice since.
Oh, was it?
It's moved again. Yeah. But no, I have such good memories of the shop at the bottom of the Empire.
You used to go open till like midnight some nights. You could go in and chat to people. It's brilliant. Yeah.
I the first time the boys were on tour to NYCC and we'd been out for a few drinks, having landed a few hours earlier type thing. And I said, you know, I'll show you where Jim Hanley's is as we're going back to the hotel. This must have been about 11 o'clock at night or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's gonna be over here. Oh, it's open. Let's go.
Brilliant.
In.
So yeah,
four drunk Scot lads went in at 11 o'clock at night. God knows what they thought about it.
Yeah, but, to be fair, it's always easy to get more money out of me when I've had a drink as well. Do you know what I mean? So I've spent a few quid in because I think Midtown's open till 9 or 10 some nights as well. Mm. You know, it's just getting up those stairs when you're really pissed at Midtown.
Oh, every time you get to it, you forget just how steep they are.
Yeah.
it's ridiculously steep to get into this. And they're not wide stairs either, which is not ideal for your average comic book reader.
Very diplomatically put.
Well, it's a different one where you're like going, I hope I don't meet somebody coming down when I'm going up, because there's no passing place.
Yeah, it's not there. Yeah, and that's a busy shop as well, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, cool. It was in Joan Hanley's I first met Darwin Cook, actually. That was when he did.
Cool.
That was way back. Yeah, lucky days.
Yeah, they used to have some great signings. I did a Hickman signing and... Yeah, all sorts of things in there. Great, great place. Greg Pack. Mm. Yeah, really good stuff. Yeah, oh, there
nice.
You go. Oh, well.
Speaking good. Of all these names, we got some shout outs this week.
Yeah, do you want to do the competition first?
Oh, yes. We had a competition, didn't we? I bet you thought we forgot, didn't you, listeners?
We promised to announce it on this one, didn't we?
Yeah, we did promise to announce. Or did we promise to announce on the last one? Either way, you're getting it this week.
Yeah. So,
yes, we had a little competition to win a no-brow book. Now, what? A Dead Endia, I believe.
Yeah, the book's Dead Endia by Hamish Steele. And the Watcher's Test, it's called.
Oh, and we gave listeners a cheeky little question. What was it, Tony?
Question was, I went and saw Deadpool 2. Deadpool 2 is a sequel to the hugely successful Deadpool 1. And after seeing it, I went...
Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah. What did I have for lunch? And can you remember the alternatives?
Veggie chili.
That packet of crisps. Or cheese and pickle sandwich. The winner was obviously veggie chili. We got quite a few right answers, actually. So I put names in a hat or in my pants.
I'm not going to say that you're predictable, Tony, but, you know, proof's in the pudding, isn't it?
Yeah, fuck you all. in fact, we got very few wrong answers, put it that way. So, yeah, I clearly am. Yeah. And the winner is the chucklehead himself again, Thomas Curry. Well done, Tom.
Yay,
another win from the Curry. Look at that. Well done. I know he's a fan of No-Brow books. So he'll like this, I think.
He knows us well.
Yeah, he does.
Which says a lot about him as well as us.
Yeah, I apologise in advance.
Yeah.
There you go. Have you got shout-outs, guys?
I've got a shout-out.
Go on in.
Jordan Kroger, he sent in the whole comic, actually, of The Fist.
Hey, yes.
Yeah, I've reviewed two issues of The Fist on the show before. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Very kind of punk-esque. It's on Kickstarter now. The Fist comic book, 130 pages of a guy punching people. A man who punches and his wife, who is a spaceship, are on the run from the evil space army. Over the top, ridiculous fights ensue. It's fantastic. It's such a great comic.
Yeah,
it's got another 23 pages to run on it. It's brilliant. I'll just get behind the Kickstarter. Back it. It's going to be great.
Indeed, we'll put that in the show notes. I've got a little shout out to someone who's been putting a smile on all of our faces since we launched our comic. Now, that's Mr. Cliff Cumber.
Yes.
This weekend.
You sent me a message that said, I've just ejaculated.
Get it right. I said, I've just come. Now, why are we all so happy? Because this man does some amazing artwork. We have all been lucky enough to be spoilt by receiving fan art of our Awesome Comics characters.
Yeah.
If you bought Awesome Comics issue 2, you know there's a fantastic Soho Red in the back.
Oh, so good. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's done a Viper, hasn't he, Dan?
Yeah, he has. Brilliant.
And he blessed my timeline with a Murder Road bit of fan art.
Yeah.
Which kind of blew my socks off and do the math. I was quite that made my weekend. which is fantastic. So thank you very much, Cliff. You know, do you think he's trying to buy our affection?
He's bought it.
Yeah, it's only worked.
We will kill someone for you if you want. No, don't. No, actually, no. This may be used as evidence.
I've
been watching a lot of Netflix documentaries recently, so you know.
Yep. If anyone killed anyone, it's not me. It's definitely Vince. There you go. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, they'll probably edit it anyway, won't they?
Yeah.
Which is more than I do with this show.
I've got a few.
Go for it.
Go for it.
Okay. First out is Rick Jackson. Rick, the successful runner of Wimbledon Comic Convention last year, which we had a blast at. I'm hoping that's coming back, actually, Rick. I haven't heard from you around that. But he's put out a Heads. It's a sci-fi private detective comic for fans of The X-Files, Dick Tracy, and They Live. It's starting as a web comic. I've had a look at it. It's really good, actually. I really think Rick has stepped up again with his game on this. Really good dialogue, especially, which I commented on him today. And nice. If you go to silentpcomics.wordpress.com, you can find it. A real bit of fun. There's one where they look at a computer screen, and that made me laugh out loud. It's quite a good bit. Have a look at that. The other couple more. Stuart from True Believers has messaged us. Hi, Stu. Met you at Size. We did have a laugh, although you were dressed as Thomas Magnum for the whole weekend. I don't know if you noticed. Which did make me chuckle. If you go to oktruebelievers.com/tickets, following feedback from the recent piece he published in the nerd section of his True Believers mailer, Troobs, worth signing up for it online, he's decided to have a look at the ticket prices for the summer event, and make advance tickets have now been reduced from £5 to £3.50, and there's no booking fee each. Each with children aged 12 and under getting in for free. So I'm doing a panel out on writing or chairing a panel on it. And you're doing a panel, aren't you, Vince? What's yours on?
I am moderating a panel about drawing and comics. Yeah. So
it's going to be a really good day, actually, yeah. I have to say. Yeah. Yeah, it's the second summer one they've run. I didn't go to the last one. The pictures of it look outstanding. So I'm really looking forward to that one. Should be a nice day, I should think. That's on the 5th of August between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. at Blackfriars Priory in Gloucester. Come down. Couple more. Scout Marauder, yes, it's on Kickstarter now. Go do it, go back it. I've backed it, by Tim Truman, one of the greatest comics of the 80s and 90s, completely undervalued. Just Timothy Truman is an absolute fucking class act. Have a look at that one. And Little Heroes 2 is now on Kickstarter, something that two people from this podcast may well be collaborating on. That right, Dan? Yeah, so yeah. We're hoping to be in that as well. Little Heroes 1 was great fun. I had great fun. It's the thing that is most given to me at conventions to sign currently at the moment, and I'm really glad that kids are enjoying it. And this one is all about family, so have a look at that one on Kickstarter. I think that launches probably today. I think as you listen to it, it's launching today.
Yeah.
So there you go. They're my ones.
There you go.
Did you not have, Mr. Hunt, did you not have to suffer drawing me as a result of the first Kickstarter as well?
I may have.
Like one of your French ladies, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The back of the car got a bit sweaty, didn't it? But we got through it.
Yeah,
we did. And I had fun. Yeah. Staring at your face.
That sounds weird.
I'll make it weird. So, no, anyway.
So I've got a couple of shout outs, if I may.
Got many,
Because I better go for Mr. Turner as aforementioned, because if I don't give him a shout out, people will wonder if I've fallen out. So clearly that's at Castle Rock Comic, if you want to look out his books of Death Rattle and Flood, both of which have received a lot of positive praise on this podcast in the past. But I can confirm that they are both brilliant books, as is his most recent book, Untitled, which is a slightly different take, but in the same sort of universe.
I really like that, man. Yeah, really good.
And well, it's probably not the right thing to do. I'm also going to have a quick shout out to a different podcast as well, That Comic Smell.
Tom, yeah, they're good guys. Yeah,
Tom and the team made a lot of noise about my last Kickstarter, and I've supported the Penguin quite a lot, so I want to give them a shout out as well.
Yeah, I subscribed to them, and they reviewed us very kindly as well, which is nice.
Good bunch they are. Yeah, yes. I listen to them as well.
Cool.
Oh, so many show notes to do. This week, and we haven't even gotten to the comics, the recommendations. So there you go. Who wants to go first this week?
Do you have our guest first?
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Alan, it's over to you.
Okay. Well, I've got two, so I don't know if you want to do one and then go round and come back
to me. Oh, why not? Let's do it.
Yeah, good idea.
Because I had to think long and hard about this, because every time I thought, I could talk about that, it's like, no, that's been recommended to me by the podcast, so I can't really go back as a recommendation. So I'm going to go a little bit old school. And first I'm going to go back to about 2003 when Onipress first came on the scene. And I'm going to recommend Queen and Country.
Yes, come on. Yes.
As a collection of books. Now, whether you go for the individual pieces or the large omnibuses, this is how spy comics, and it actually is a pulp book as well, in my view. So it's very fixed on that. This is how spy books should be done, because this is spies and politics. This is not about your James Bond with your gadgets. This is very much about saying, what is the nitty-gritty of what a spy would actually do in the current world? So if it comes down to saying that there's a need for somebody to be assassinated in the Russian mafia, then how do we get around to doing that? And why is it happening? Well, it's happening because of the political intrigue on this side of the fence needs that person to be killed. It's an absolutely fantastic set of books written by Greg Rucka and a variety of artists.
Some great artists, aren't they? Yeah.
You know, Steve Rawlinson does book one, and that's as good a place to start as any.
There's Mike Norton on it somewhere as well, I think. Isn't he do a bit?
Yes, he does one of the books.
Chris Samney, is he?
And Steve Lieber does one of the books.
Yeah.
So it's how spy books should be done. And that,
it's like an English homeland, isn't it? It's because it's people don't realise it's actually MI5 / MI6 based, isn't it? And it's like that with Homeland, but cleverer. That's how I always put it.
Mm. Yeah. It's based loosely, or it's connected loosely to a late 70s, early 80s television series called Sandbaggers.
Which is a brilliant series. Oh, you've seen it?
Oh, it's the end of season, the twist at the end of season one.
Oh. Well, people don't realise that allegedly the guy who wrote it was, I'm going to say Naval Intelligence or something like that, wasn't he, X?
Yeah, yeah.
He went missing after he wrote the second series.
Well, season three was done, and it was season four was meant to happen, and then he disappeared.
It's available on DVD. If anyone can find it, I highly recommend it. I watched it one Christmas. I just literally just sat there and watched the whole thing, and it's the cleverest bit of television you'll likely see. Properly good.
And it's weird because it's a spy drama, and you think, oh, it's going to be James Bond and all this, but there's a lot of it where people are just sitting around in offices talking.
Yeah.
And I think the way I described it to somebody else, it's kind of the James Bond meets Yes Prime Minister with all the gadgets and all the humour taken out.
It's a smiley. It's got a Smiley's People vibe going on as well. If I bumped on and watched Tinker Tailor and Smiley's People and stuff like that from that. Mm. Same sort of area, you know, a very sort of stiff upper lip, but like practical guys doing, you know, really good.
So anyway, Queen and Country, it's a nice big chunky book to, or set of books to read. There's also three novels that
they're adapting as well, aren't they? They're in plans to adapt.
They've been talking about it for a long time. Yeah.
My fear with that is that Coldest City by Andrew Johnston, who wrote one of the Coldest City, frankly, I said this to Alex Johnson in the past, sits alongside Queen Country and could be a companion book without any worries whatsoever. And Coldest City is a brilliant book.
But it became something else, didn't it? Yeah.
Atomic Blonde is not Coldest City. Right? Atomic Blonde's not as bad as some people made out to be.
I had fun watching it. Yeah.
But it's not Coldest City. So I would worry about Queen and Country, because I actually don't think that the current media climate actually suits it. Not least of which, because you've got to say, as I say, it's about people who are going out, who are being instructed to go out and assassinate people, and then it's the politics behind that. That's not a comfortable thing to watch for some people. So
I spoke to Rucker about this at one of the events they had at Earl's Court years ago, and this was before Homeland came out. And I was saying, I really love it. I actually went and bought an extra trade that I already had so he could sign it. And he hinted that Keira Knightley was lined up for it at the time. Which has obviously fallen out of bed, I suspect, since then. But then the girl who was in Juno, I think, was hinted at for a while. I forget her name now, but she was hinted at it for a while as well.
I think, oddly enough, it was at the same event. I got him to sign one of the Queen Country books, and I also got him to sign the cover to the Whiteout DVD.
Ah, right, okay.
you do realise that I'm basically disowning this. Because obviously Whiteout is a brilliant book. Again, kind of set in the same universe, but never really stated as such. But again, the movie bears little or no resemblance to the actual
book. I've never made it through the movie, I've got to be honest with you. I've tried it a couple of times, I just got a bit... I'll go back to it, but I've not watched it all yet.
Yeah. That basically tells me that you got as far as the shower scene and then had to turn off.
Yeah.
do you want my second recommendation now, or do you want to go around and come back?
We'll go around and then come
back. Yes, go around. Sure. Okay. Who's going to be... That's a very good recommendation that we haven't mentioned on the show before.
Yeah.
So who's going to go next?
Go on, Bill. You go. Go on.
All right, then. Here's one that I discovered this week, just through the old Twitters, the social media network. And that's by a creator called Joe Palmer. And that book is Grind. Have you seen artwork for this going about?
I think you sent it to us, didn't you?
Yeah,
you say it's on Gumroad or something.
On Gumroad indeed, and that's where I got it from. And I absolutely love this. The basic setup is Tony and Joy are rival couriers competing to retrieve a package. As they speed through the streets on roller skates, the competition escalates. That's the simplest synopsis you could ever possibly hope for. And that's exactly what it is. This is a wonderful sort of sci-fi one and done tale, like about exactly that. I mean, there's a few twists and turns. It's only 24 pages, and quite a lot happens during that. And I think this is absolutely magnificent. You know, this is right up my street. I'm sure a lot of the people who listen to this show would absolutely love it as well. It's another one to actually add to my fave comics of the year list, which is already packed, as we know, because it seems like every other week I'm mentioning something that I think is one of the best things ever. I think we've been really lucky this year, haven't we, with the comics.
It's been a good year, actually. Last year we were a bit, but this year is fucking taken off again, isn't it?
Absolutely, really. Yeah. And this book is absolutely just fits properly in with that list. There's so many things to love about this book. The story itself runs at like a breakneck pace, because they're couriers on roller skates. If it doesn't feel like it's moving at 50 miles an hour, you're probably doing something wrong. So the two main characters speed through the streets, but it's like an unpolished sort of rust coloured city, which it's just brilliant to behold. Is almost a character in itself, but these two characters are playing like a game of one-upmanship as they're racing to like retrieve the package. That race only intensifies when a police unit whose purpose is to take down rogue robots come into play, which is telling for a reason, because one of the couriers looks quite robotic. I'm not going to say any spoilers, but it's definitely got great design to it, I think. There's speed lines ahoy, and like there's cool rollerblading tricks, a robot wearing a monocle, and there's also a well-meaning but paranoid old lady. And this is very subtle. She's got a few hairs on her chin, quite a few big hairs.
Nice.
So it's very subtle. I mean, it could just be like a shake of the hand as he was inking, but I think it's definitely she's got a hairy chin, surely. But the characters are what make this. I mean, it's an action comic, pure and simple, but I think to have a book that's going to stick in people's memories and want people like wanting more, your characters have got to be good. That's why we love comics, isn't it, really, for the characters most of the time.
Yeah.
And they're so well defined in this, so much so that I actually said to Joe, I immediately, as soon as I finished it, I got onto social media and just said, tweeted Joe immediately saying that if he makes more stories with these characters, I'm completely all in. Which he said there was no plans to do anymore. But come on, let's all force him to do it. No. But the characters, like their dialogue, sort of sparkles with like real top-notch banter that, you know, you can tell they really know each other, and they know what each other are capable of. And it's that sort of believability that helps you bring even more, brings you in the world like in a real sort of natural way, which is and the world itself is only really sort of scantily glimpsed. Through really, because so many speed lines going on, it's hard to tell. You know, you can tell what the city is, but the story's moving at such a pace that, like, you're almost like you're short of breath reading it.
Nice.
But what Joe, I think what he's done with this is marvellous. I'm officially now a fan of his work, and we'll follow it from now on. you know, I talked about the characters and the script, and it's funny. You know, there's, you know, there's moments where you just, you gasp at something that happens. I'm trying to say no spoilers because it is 24 pages, a lot happens, but I don't even want to tell you what characters look like because I think you have to see them for yourself. But yeah, his artwork is clean, beautiful. It has shades of like Paul Grist mixed with a dash of Daniel Warren Johnson. So okay, picture that if you will. You know, it feels like every line is thought out. You know, there's not a mistake put down. But yeah, I'm equally enamored with him creating a bunch of likable different characters, and the world I just want to see more of. So if you haven't heard of this yet, please get on it, especially as it's an absolute steal, because it's currently £1 on Gumroad, just £1, and you can just get it. He just wants to get the comic out there, I think. Now, you can get the Gumroad is at joepalmerart.com/grind. And that'll take you to the Gumroad. Like I say, 24 pages, £1. I think he's an absolute talent to watch out for, and no mistake, if this is anything to go by. I think he's had work published in Future Quake in 2000 AD.
Amongst others, is he? Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice.
And you can see why. And like from this issue alone, I think he's surely going to producing more like amazing sort of solo comics in the future. So I'm looking forward to seeing where he goes. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at joepalmerart. But yeah, Grind, loved it. Absolutely loved it. So nice. Yeah, that's my one.
Nice one. Shall I go?
Go for it.
I'm going to go for... I had a couple of alternatives that I wasn't really decided on until just now. But the reason I'm going to go for this one, this is Dunce 1-3, which I picked up from Good Comics from their store.
You've been sending us a few panels of this, haven't you, which have just been laugh out loud funny.
Brilliant, yeah.
Have you read it, dude, have you? Yeah.
I followed him online. I've got one of his earlier books is... It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah, just brilliant. He's a Norwegian creator. And I compared in a review I wrote this week to hit. I said they're a bit like a newspaper strip. And somebody, some snarky, clever person wrote back saying, yes, I think you'll find that they were printed in a newspaper. Oh, thank you very much. I was right then. Thank you. So, yeah, so it's a sort of similar sort of vibe to it. Obviously a Norwegian newspaper, which I can't read, so thank you for letting me know. But it's the style of it. If we're in the land of comparing different sort of styles to it, but it's got that sort of Euro, I'm going to say Scandinavian quirk to it. It's slightly unusual. There's a little bit of the Beano and the Dandy in there, and a little bit of the sort of autobiographical sort of narrative of something like a diary comic from a small press creator, or if you guys are aware of James Kolchaka, Superstar,
yeah,
he does a sort of diary comic, a bit like that, really. The art is a smidge of Jim Marfood, and maybe a bit of Scotty Young. It's that sort of cartoony, outrageous, sort of vibrant,
loose,
frenetic
sort of brushwork type.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, really, really interesting. It starts off, it's all about this character who just wears a dunce's hat, and it isn't explained why he wears it, and I don't want it explained, and that's why he's called Dunce. And it starts off with the first strip of the whole thing is he's got a skull for a face, and he's chatting to his mate, who also happens to be he looks a bit like a fish dressed as a geography teacher with a sort of polo neck on and a corduroy jacket, drinking a coffee, and he says, oh, I'm not feeling well. And his mate, who's this fish teacher, says, oh, maybe you're anemic. And he takes a load of tablets and drinks like a jug of coffee out from the coffee machine. And he turns into a human. And then he just sort of turns into his sort of many adventures. He's sort of wandering through his life with his kids and, you know, shouting at people in the internet and failing to, you know, falling over in front of his kids and doing stuff. And occasionally it takes a little dive off into a sort of quite a strange little world where he's talking to a man who's a crow and all this sort of thing. It's really, really good. There's three issues out. I have to say I was immediately drawn to the covers of them, really iconic covers, which I'll post on the Facebook page. But I know when I posted them on Twitter when I bought them, which was a couple of weeks ago, a lot of people replied, said, oh, that's that. That looks interesting. One of them's is a version of the dunce wearing his hat and his long coat, but it's a kind of an ape of a James Dean photograph of him walking through the rain and smoking with his hands in his pockets. If anyone knows that sort of iconic James Dean picture. Yeah, really, really funny. Like it's another one a bit like the Penguin. It's the sort of thing for the downstairs loo, which is going to make you laugh. He goes to a comedy club and there's a clown there who bashes people on the head. And it's just bizarre. It's just sort of strange. And that's always good, isn't it? You can find it at Dunce Comic on Twitter, or you can get a copy by going to the Good Comics store at Good Comics. And it's a big cartel. I've got it right in front of me at the moment, I'm afraid. Or if you can go to his store, you can go to Jensk, JENSK.NO, mm-hmm. and you'll get a copy there as well. But real sort of Euro comedy quirkiness, really, really nuts stuff. But for example, the kids keep shouting out Mongolian cannibal samurais and running about and stuff like that. Just stuff like that. You know, there you go.
If you can find a copy of his, I think it's Cabin Fever.
Right.
It's really good. It's written as a silent comic as well, so it has that advantage.
Good. Yeah.
You don't need to worry about the translation element. Yeah. And it's beautiful, set on a boat and doing a fishing thing and all going weird. I'm sure he also said he's going to be at Thought Bubble this year. So.
Yeah, he is. I don't know about Thought Bubble. He's definitely going to be at LCAF because I spoke to him a couple of days ago and I said, so I'm hoping to get a little bit of an interview with him if his English is up to it at LCAF, which should be quite interesting. Yeah, there you go. Also, just a little shout out to Mauro, who has just posted a review of our comic. And probably one of the best reviews I've read for a while, actually, of anything. Really well written.
I've not
really
read it yet.
I've not read it, but I believe you.
Yeah, I went quiet a minute ago. That's why I was reading it. But yeah, really good. Yeah. And the other one I just want to give a little shout out to is Glorious Wrestling Alliance Grappling Road by Josh Hicks, which is the second issue. I was a bit late getting to this. I know he's working on the third issue as we speak, but it's his usual nutty wrestling book. Go and have a look at that. He'll definitely be at LCAF as well. He's texting me today saying he's already booked his Airbnb. If you go to joshhicks.co.uk or follow him at Josh Hicks on Twitter, you'll find him. Yeah, brilliant stuff as well. There you go.
Nice. Okay, Daniel.
Me. Mine's Away. I backed this on Kickstarter.
Oh, yes. Brilliant.
It's turned up a couple of weeks ago, but I've only just got around to talk about it on the show for one reason or another. It's written by John Late, drawn by Grant Richards, coloured by Daryl Stevens, and it's lettered by Rob Jones and Medius. And the blurb is...
Who also appears.
An ordinary man is ripped from his family and life time after time and thrust into the multiverse to learn the skills and abilities he needs to save not only our world, but the entire universe of an impossible invading force. So you're probably familiar with John from previous comics he's worked on, like Brethren Born, Late Nights, and Suited and Booted through Comic House.
Great artist.
thank you. Yeah, it's kind of, again, one of those ones you kind of don't want to go into too much about kind of ruining it. I feel bad for being in a review about kind of wanting to divulge too much, but it reminds me very much of kind of stuff like Planetary?
Okay.
It's got that kind of angle with kind of the otherworldly stuff and the art style kind of stepping up to meet it. It's published through Marcosia, isn't it? Yeah.
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 John's done really great.
But they published it, haven't they? So, yeah.
John's done really great. He kind of, every project he comes to, it's kind of like a remarkable sort of improvement. It keeps on getting better and better all the time. And I feel like he's really hit his stride with Away. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it's been in the process for a while, isn't it? And you can see from the art how gorgeous it is as well. The art is incredible.
Grant is absolutely incredible. He's really good. So good.
He's got to have 2000 AD or Pro or you know, some kind of European publisher's got to pick him up soon.
Yeah, I really think that's going to be the case. Yeah. And Daryl, what's his bloody name? Daryl Stevens. Does great work on the colours. It's kind of one of those ones I really like. Grant's black and whites. I would happily just have read the whole thing in black and white, but some of the kind of the dimensional stuff, kind of multi-dimensional stuff, looks good with the colour work.
It's a big story, isn't it?
It's a really big story. I mean, it moves along at a bloody cracking pace.
Yeah.
It's a great one, yeah, and really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'd heartily recommend getting one. And you can do so in branches of selected branches of Waterstones, and you can get it on Amazon. And there's a whole slew of other places, but we'll give you some links in the show notes.
Yeah.
Or just pop in, meet John next time he's doing a show. I'm sure you have copies on him, as well as Late Nights and Brevenborn.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well worth it. So, yeah. Alan, take us home.
Nice
strong.
One, John.
Last one out.
So I'm going to ask Tony a pop quiz question.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm going to take us back to our earlier roots. If I was to say Dancing Elephant Press to you, do you remember who that was?
Dancing Elephant Press, yeah, it does ring a bell.
I know.
Is it a British?
I know who it is.
It's British, isn't it?
Oh.
It's not Strange Haven, is it?
No, no. If I was to say a police drama that was basically Sin City done in a Batman the Animated style.
Paul Grist.
Paul Grist, I'm going to talk about Kane.
Kane, of course it is. Yeah.
So I'm going to recommend Kane. And that's this, nice. Because this is probably one of the earliest small press books that I got back into. Because I say it's originally came out about 1993, I should say. Though the books were eventually picked up and done in trade format by Image and should still be available for that. So this is a police crime drama. Detective Kane returns to active duty with the New Eden Police Department following a six-month suspension after he shot and killed his partner, Dennis. Following his return, the police officers give Kane a welcome back gift, a couple of bullets with his name engraved on it. It's absolutely stunning in how the police drama should be done. Again, fits that sort of pulp view in my piece. And book two, Rabbit Hunt, features one of my favourite characters of all time. Mr. Flopsy Wopsy, a children's entertainer pushed beyond his limits.
That contains, for my money, one of the best silent issues I've ever read.
The bit where he runs through the taxi cab. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no word. It's just beautiful storytelling in that book.
Well, if you like Mr. Flopsy Wopsy, I'm again going to recommend going to Comic Art Fans. And if you find my gallery room on there, you'll find a gallery of Mr. Flopsy Wopsy's.
Oh, amazing.
Featuring the likes of Dave Gibbons.
Don't say that out loud at parties, by the way.
Yeah. Do you want to see my Mr. Flopsy Wopsy?
Gallery. Well,
it is when you go up to Dunkin' for Gradio and say, can you draw me a Flopsy Wopsy? Or,
And or just draw around it.
So the great and the good of British comics from that period are drawn Mr. Flopsy Wopsy there. So it was, but yeah, no, Paul is also one of the nicest guys in comics, who again flies very much under the radar.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, yeah.
Indeed.
Cool.
Oh, look at that! So many comics this week.
Yeah,
we've come back strong, haven't we? So we expect to hear all our listeners complaining that they're either out of pocket. Or thanking us for the nice recommendations. So I know there's a few there that I definitely need to pick up or reread. Or I've never read Queen and Country, for instance. So
mate, you can get it in lovely big, novel size. On this, they're not full size, are they? They're thick books, but
I've been meaning to read that. So there you go. Loads of brilliant comics, and back to the norm for the awesome pod.
We hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us, Alan. It was brilliant.
Thank you, dude.
We hope you enjoyed it, folks. If we got anything wrong, if we got anything right,
likely, or maybe
before
he wraps stuff up, Vince, can I mention about the awesome comic issue two?
I was getting to that.
Sorry.
But I'll tell you what, before Edit I do all out. The emails, we've got a comic out, and like Dan. Take it away.
Yeah, so after the storming success of The Awesome Comic issue one, we've followed up with part two. Kept that number and sequence going, which you can buy it online at the awesome comic Big Cartel store. We've got issues one and two, £3 each, or you can buy them digitally for £1. And check it out. It's good. It's getting rave reviews.
Rave reviews. Yeah,
no, we've got a couple of good reviews.
Yeah, we truly appreciate everyone who reads it.
Yes.
And if you read it and you enjoy it, send us a letter.
We're
looking for letters for the next issue now, aren't we?
We are looking for letters for the next issue, so send them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Once you've read the issue, let us know what you think, what you want to know more about the stories, because there's lots going on in our comic, an awful lot. So, definitely.
If you want to know what porn that Dan is currently sending me on the WhatsApp group,
Phil,
please write a letter in.
Yeah.
If you want to share on the group, not got a problem with that.
See, this is why I sent my letter to the first issue and not to the second. I was going in blind. That was
you don't want to do that, son. Trust me.
Yeah.
So if we offended you this week, then please send your emails to awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, or if you've got any inquiries at all. You can follow us on Twitter.
That stamp. That email.
First show back, and I'm really struggling to get through these links.
Sorry.
Keep going.
Oh, God. Right, follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod, where we'll be announcing guests. Maybe we haven't done a poll in ages, mainly because, as we said at the start of the show, we're all quite lazy. So, you know.
Yep.
But you never know. Yeah, if you follow us on Twitter, we'll probably spam you with this episode anyway. So you can follow us on, you can like us on Facebook. Facebook.com. I'm going to keep going. Facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you do Facebook and you want to talk about comics, have genuine conversations about comics, whether it's making them, reading them, art, just anything in general, go to the group Awesome Comics Talk. We've had a lot of nice feedback about that group from people that interact on it, and it's
We heard a lot of nice stuff at Sites, didn't we, as well? Yeah. I know Stuart gave us a little shout out in the Nerds Who Haunt Themselves today about that.
Lovely.
Yeah. So, he said Vince won't hear it because he don't listen, but Tony will. So there you go. That's true, isn't it?
that is well nice. That is. If I'm going to be mentioned anywhere, I will always listen.
Come on, Thomas Magnum. Yeah. Did you see he shaved his beard off and took a picture of himself?
Yeah,
in
stages.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's class.
Yeah. If you want to post those stages on the group, we will actually approve that one, Stu.
Hell yeah.
Dress up as Higgins just for you.
Yeah. I think my favourite Magnum is the new one with the praline in there. It's lovely. Anyway,
you've been to the seaside this weekend. You sent me pictures.
And I got sunburn.
Did you?
Yeah.
On the little fella or just where?
Oh, I'm not saying. I think the listeners have already made up their minds. Yeah. But thank you for listening to us. Whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, please, please, please subscribe and spread the word and leave us a nice review. Helps get the word out about the show. And as you can tell from this week, who knows what's going to happen? We have great guests and we have great chats. And I get bullied. So there you go.
Back to the norm.
Yep. And if you listen to us on the Stitcher, the Podnose, the Podknife, what other pod networks are we on, Tony?
There's the very famous pod net called Pod Last Train from Putan.
Do you know what? If you hadn't already said that joke, that would have been the best.
That was before we recorded. No one had heard it.
Was it? Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, do I need to laugh as if I've never heard it then?
Oh, yeah. a little one for Christian Wild Goose Pod Smurf.
Oh, God.
Because I've been sending pictures of Smurfs all week just for a laugh.
Yeah. Me and Christian Wild Goose were doing sign language at each other after our size. Make of that what you will.
What exactly is the sign language for Smurf?
Oh, no. Please don't. Please don't. Anyway, thank you very much. Where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk or on Twitter at Ezoyz.
Nice. Daniel?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and Vanguard issue 15 launches on the 20th of this month.
Get in.
I'll be annoying you about that nearer the time.
Splendid. Annoy me all you want, Dan.
Thank you. Right. I'll try to on this show.
Don't I know about
it? If you want to annoy Vince, you can go too.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com and the triumphant Alan Henderson. Where can people find you and your work?
On Twitter, I'm Shadow1972. And if you just Google Penned Gwyn, that's PennedGuin, you'll find me on the variety of social medias, including the Big Cartel shop, where you can get the recent big blue book that comes with a red cover.
Which I own. Excellent. It's very good. Yeah, it's a great book.
Nice. So get it, folks. You won't regret it if you like a good pun. And we love a pun on this show.
We do.
So, yes, we're back. We're bad.
No, we're brassy.
And Tony's mad. So thank you for listening from Dan, Tony, Alan and myself. Have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Look forward to next week's show. And as always, what should they always do?
I reckon it should stay awesome.
I think they should. Nice. I'm not going to bother asking Tony. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
So there you go, Alan. That's how the sausage is made.
And there's your outtake. Yes.
Is that him back? Is that you back, Dan?
It is.
Oh, yeah, that's a quick boot.
Which makes you wonder if you wash these hands, but anyway.
I doubt it.
So that spicy food went through you like a bullet train, didn't it?
Last train from Bhutan. Oh, let's play that film. Let's make it.
That's the greatest play on words I've heard in ages.